We're doing 3,000 events a year, the largest event catering company in the country, so much so that all the money was drained out of the account. I thought about shutting down Food Dudes. Boston Bruins, the Tampa Bay Lightning, there was like 400 people coming into the hotel. They're athletes that wanted breakfast, lunch, and dinner. The signs are right there in front of us. You just need to like follow them. When I was coming up, if you screwed up a dish, you'd get a hot frying pan thrown at your head. You might as well just stop because you don't have what it takes to be in this industry. And for the first year of the business, like we did it out of my mom's condo. Find a way to make $100. Once you found a way to make $100, do that 1,000 times and you'll be successful.
Welcome back to the MBH podcast, Money Buys Happiness. Guys, before we get into it, you know what to do. Like, subscribe, leave a comment under the video. I like what they've been doing recently. I've been seeing our audience has been like commenting like a couple times as the episode goes on. They're like, okay, 30th minute, they're dropping a comment. 40th minute, dropping a comment. So guys, keep it up. We love it.
Okay? Almost at 100K on IG, by the way.
Yeah, when this comes out, we have to be at 100K.
All right, fine. Drop us a follow on IG.
Yep.
Snapchat.
Yep.
Come on. Merch, new merch coming.
Yes.
Soon.
Yes.
Go buy the merch that's already out.
Yep.
Because it's almost gone.
Yes.
All right. Simple.
Easy. We don't ask for much.
We got Adrian Nyman with us today.
Yes.
All right. Super chef.
Mm.
Yes, sir. All right. Entrepreneur. Toronto boy.
Yep.
Yeah.
We're in Miami. Full circle, baby. What's up, man? How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Of course. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
For anyone that might not know you or your story or what you do, give us a little introduction as to who you are and what you do.
Sounds good. So my name is Adrian Nyman, as you mentioned. I'm the founder of the Food Dudes. Started when I was 23 years old.
Damn.
So I've been at it now for 16 years. You guys can run the math to tell how old I am now. Big 40th birthday coming up in a month.
Yes.
Started Food Dudes when I was 23. Apprenticed at North 44, which was a really celebrated restaurant, fine dining restaurant in Toronto when I was 16. Played hockey my whole life, had a dream of making it to the NHL. Realized that like only like 0.5% of hockey players make it to the NHL. Yep. So chose another path and, you know, followed my passion with cooking. Always knew I didn't want to be just a chef. Always knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur and create lots of businesses, restaurants, anything involved in hospitality I was extremely passionate about. Yeah. As it pertains to catering, at the time I was going to a lot of events and the industry just seemed so tired and outdated. And like boring, and the food offerings and the vibe just wasn't it.
Yeah.
So I took it upon myself to start this company. Got a lot of slack about the name Food Dudes. Basically just saying that it's just like, given how high quality our food was and, you know, how gourmet and fine dining it was, that the name didn't resonate to that.
It didn't do it justice, really.
But I was really trying to start a movement and make it more about this brand, Food Dudes, that you can have a cool name and do cool stuff. At the time, Rockstar Chefs was like a really big thing, like Guy Fieri, Gordon Ramsay, Jamie Oliver. And, you know, to me, I'm like, no, the name's going to hit and people are going to understand that you can have a cool name that has no pretension in it and, you know, still be hired for a $500 per guest meal, and just ran with it and had a lot of bumps and bruises along the way, but stuck with it, kept my head down. And, you know, now we're at a point, I think we're doing 3,000 events a year. We're probably the largest event catering company in the country. Have over 500 employees across the board between all the restaurants and catering now. So it's been quite a journey. And, you know, that's just kind of a brief snippet.
Yeah, that's super impressive, man. So you started, I guess you started really diving into that space when you were 16.
Yeah, like I was actually, I'll never forget, in the auditorium at, I went to Northern. Shout out to Northern.
Cool.
Griffin boy. And I was in the auditorium and they were doing a co-op job fair and there was just these two guys and they were in these white chef jackets and they were like tossing the pasta and seasoning it. Like this is before Salt Bay ever existed. You know what I mean? And I just like was mesmerized by it. And if I really look back to my childhood when I was homesick from school or whatever, if I ever was like flipping the TV to different channels, this guy, the urban peasant, like old guy, English dude. And like, for whatever reason, I would just like watch him like cooking and like chopping. And, you know, I really like date back to when I was like a 9-year-old kid. Like I was always like, I always feel like the signs are right there in front of us and we just need to like follow them. Mm-hmm. Right. And when I was in the auditorium and I saw that, I was just like, yo, how can I go? Like, I want to do like a, I want to do a co-op job placement, but I want to work at this place. Cause like whatever these guys are doing, I want to learn how to do. And, you know, they put me at another placement, like some like cheesecake, like diner cafe place where they told me that I could like, you know, do dishes and that kind of stuff. And I was like,
gotta work your way up.
Yeah. And I just said, nah, like I'm going to go and find, and North 44 had already picked their applicant, and I really had to go in and speak to the chef, Richard Andino at the time, and say, listen, like, I'm going to work my ass off for you. I know you usually only take one job placement. I'm begging you to take a second one. And they took a chance on me, and it all worked out. I think I broke the record for the most amount of hours of any student. Like that year I did like 900 hours.
This guy wouldn't stop, like, eh? He just wouldn't stop.
Was that unpaid?
That was unpaid.
Wow.
And Brooke McDougal, who was the sous chef at the time, who is still at Bimark to this day, I'll never forget this. The first month or two, I was just going through the motions and, you know, really only putting in the bare minimum, like 3 hours a day, clocking in, clocking out. And that would just be prep, but it was a like nighttime restaurant. So if you really wanted to see how the restaurant worked, you'd have to stay for dinner service.
Yeah.
So I'd have to like call my mom and be like, listen, I'm not going to be home for dinner. I'm going to miss hockey practice or whatever.
Yeah.
And she let me run with it and could tell that I was like really passionate. But Brooke basically like locked me in the walk-in fridge. This wouldn't exist now. I can tell you, you can't act this way in this day and age with everything that's happened. But he basically like grabbed an apple. He's like, you don't appreciate this piece of fruit. He goes, you're coming in, clocking out. You don't give a shit, and you shouldn't even really be here. And if you're not going to start showing the effort, you might as well just stop because you don't have what it takes to be in this industry.
Oh, my God.
And he left me in there, and I was, like, freezing cold and, like, thinking about it for a minute, and something just clicked in my head. And, you know, I owe a lot to Brooke for having that tough conversation with me because it opened my eyes to what it would really take to, like, you know, build the – like necessary skill set to be able to exist in the hospitality industry.
Yeah. It's good that you got that kind of tough love at that. I guess how old were you there? 16, 17?
I was 16 or 17. They used to call me Baby Huey. Like I didn't go through puberty until I was like 17. So I was going through this awkward stage at the time. And but it was like a dream team. Everybody that was on that team there, that from like working a veg station to Saucier to Hot App to Garde Manger, all those cooks at that time went on to open their own restaurants and create very successful, you know, restaurants or like operations in hospitality.
What was like the, your family's response to you wanting to take this path now? Cause like you said, hockey, you know, maybe were you good in school?
I was not good in school.
Okay. So now you're taking a
I was a good cheater. There I was really good.
You're taking this direction.
I found a way through.
Which is kind of like, if you ask someone from the outside, would be a tough industry to get into, right? Everyone always says, okay, being a chef or even owning a restaurant, very hard to do.
Correct.
Right? So what was the response from your family? What was the support like there?
My mom always supported whatever it is that I wanted to do. My dad, you know, I'm actually working on like a book right now.
Okay,
and one of the chapters is called My Son, the Cook.
Yeah.
And the reason I say that is, you know, for the longest time, even after I started Food Dudes, he would just call me a cook and introduce me to his friends as a cook.
Okay.
Mm. I'd be like, Dad, I'm not a cook. Like, I'm a chef. I'm a business owner. I'm this. I'm going to build this multi-million dollar business. And, like, he wasn't really having it. He was so stuck on me being a hockey player. And if I wasn't going to be a hockey player, he's a really celebrated lawyer in Toronto. And I think had hoped that I would take that path. My brother ended up taking that path. Okay. So that's okay. But, yeah, it was difficult. You know, for the longest time, I didn't feel that he really respected that choice. Like, in general, chefs are underappreciated.
I agree.
Yeah. And I think only now, and even still, I would say, don't get enough respect. Like, the amount of hours and time and dedication you have to put in.
Yeah.
I do feel it's gotten better. but I feel it was almost like frowned upon, or like you had to be ashamed to wanting to be a chef and wear an apron and, you know, look down upon. And that's something that I definitely wanted to change and wanted to encourage people to be proud of being a chef. And I think now between Instagram and YouTube and TikTok, everyone's a chef, right?
Yep.
During the pandemic, you just saw everybody creating these recipes and they go viral. And I think that's so great because food, whether you're a chef or not, like everybody should know how to cook. It's so important to know, you know, how to, like, what a skill set to have.
Yeah.
If you have decide to have children or a wifey or, you know, a partner, having that ability to make a meal and a nutritious meal and knowing the right techniques is so important.
I can't cook that well. Now you're making me feel bad.
What's interesting I find is, like you said, chefs maybe until more recently haven't been like super respected, but I was a food runner once at El Catrin. I'm sure you know the restaurant very well.
High volume.
Super. I was a food runner. I was going crazy there, but I worked there for a bit. And it's funny because you say that from the outside, maybe chefs aren't so respected. Maybe now that's sort of changing because of the internet and whatnot. But inside a kitchen, the level of respect for the chef is just like, it's unmatched.
Yeah.
Right? Like everybody in that kitchen looks at the chef as like almost like a god in a way. Right?
Correct.
Yes, chef. Yes, chef. Like the way you have,
Full trust in that chef.
But dude, even the way you have to speak to them, like you have to say, yes, chef.
Well, that's your boss. It's your boss.
Like, but dude, there's like a, like, listen, you people talk to their bosses at a construction. They don't go like, hey, boss. Like, you know what I mean? Like it's very, so that's why I always found weird how it's like you're saying, outside, maybe chefs aren't so respected, but inside the kitchen.
Because it never really went mainstream. It was always just stayed in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Right. You know, until social media.
True.
Then now there's a lot of chefs being celebrated out there, this and that, because people at least know who they are. How many times have you went to a restaurant, you have no idea who the chef is?
Yeah, that's 90%
of the time,
that's
right?
A fair point.
No, I think it's true. I think, like, look, chefs demand respect. And I think because of the lack of appreciation they get externally, internally they try to like compensate,
overcompensate
for that.
And
it got to a point where our industry went through you know, what's the right way to say this, like there was a time period where like there was a shift where like those chefs were not able to like demand that power and respect, like I'm not gonna lie, like when I was coming up, if you screwed up a dish, you'd get a hot frying pan thrown at your head.
Yeah.
Like you do that now, you're going to jail.
Like, so you're saying like it kind of got softer.
It got much softer.
I saw that and stuff, man. I'm like,
one thing I'm really glad that switched was, I think that, you know, the Me Too movement taught us all a lot.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, a lot of chefs, you know, that weren't necessarily, you know, even part of that, you know, were labeled as being like disrespectful to women.
Yeah.
But there were certain chefs that crossed the line and disrespected females being servers, female chefs, didn't give them the same respect.
Yeah.
And I'm really glad that that shift happened.
Yeah.
And it was unfortunate that some females felt the need to take advantage of that Me Too situation to try to be compensated, right? Because it's always that fine line, right?
Yeah.
But overall, I can tell you from being in this industry now for over 20 years, that shift had to happen because the way that, you know, females were treated in the kitchen or outside of the kitchen, you know, it's a very competitive sport and you're working a lot of hours. So these people become like your family and it's a lot of stress and, you know, long days. And, you know, sometimes you say the wrong thing, but like, I'm really glad that that shift happened. It's unfortunate that certain people had to, you know, go down the way that they did.
Take advantage of it.
Yeah. But it is also, you know, I'm not going to lie, like certain chefs really did cross the line. And when you cross the line, you know, you're going to be penalized or punished.
There's consequences. Yeah.
It created this new movement of, and I love nothing more now than like, my executive chef of Rasa and Sarah is a female chef. Her name's Leah. She's been with me now for, I want to say, 7 or 8 years. Started at the bottom and worked her all the way to the top. My head chef, Yoko at Food Dudes, is a female. My CEO is a female. Like, I really love empowering women in the workplace. You know, I think in a lot of ways, women are smarter than men.
Of course. No, we agree. We agree.
Come out and say that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm just glad that, like, that's more we're past that now.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think we look at that and say, oh, there's a female chef running this restaurant.
Yes, yes. I think we're past
that. So I love when I go to a restaurant and see that now. I'm like, fuck yeah. Yeah. Like, you know, and it's super
exciting.
I'm
sure when you were coming up, it was a lot. It was male predominant.
Very male dominant.
Right?
Yeah. Like, I'd say 90%.
Wow.
And, you know, there's a lot of female chefs, amazing female chefs in Toronto that could cook circles around the guys. But
never got the chance.
Just because they were female, weren't given the same opportunity.
True.
And I feel because of the Me Too movement, that shifted now.
Yeah. So I want to take it back now to your story a little bit. I want to go from 16, you're doing your placement, you're learning, you're getting blasted a little bit, locked in the freezer,
in the fridge, whatever.
So what happens between that point and I guess the birth of Food Dudes?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. So I worked at North 44 for roughly, I then started to get paid.
There you go. Nice.
Yeah. I'm not like, what you could get a, once again, talk about like fair pay, like about what's fair or not. Like now cooks and chefs are being compensated at least fairly. Back then, you know, you would get $75 a day to work 15 hours, right? So like work out the hourly rate.
That's not good.
Yeah, it's horrible.
So I stuck it out though, because I really looked at it like going to cooking school. And like for anyone out there that wants to be a chef, you know, I don't think going to cooking school, I don't think we live in a world now where going to cooking school is important or relevant. Okay. I think going to get hands-on experience at a restaurant, a cafe, anywhere, a quick service spot, you know, a bar that serves food, you'll learn so much more about cooking and what it takes to become a chef than you would at going to cooking school.
Okay.
I think that that's a really important thing. So I looked at it as, okay, I'm getting paid like shit, but at least at the end of the day, I'm getting an education. Mm. I won't have to go to cooking school on top of this.
Yep.
So I worked at North 44 for 2.5 years, got a few pay raises along the way. And when I graduated, I was the last OAC, which was grade 13. It's a double cohort year. So grade 12s and grade 13s went to university at the same time. So double the amount of volume, and the universities could only take so many students. And if it wasn't for my hockey capabilities, I probably wouldn't have gotten into the University of Guelph, because I really wanted, and it was important to my parents, more so than it was important to me, to get a university degree.
Yeah.
You know, it was a different world back then where like having a university degree actually mattered.
Of course.
Where now I'm not sure it matters as much,
you
know, with social media and all the other ways, you know, you can make money. So I got in a Bachelor of Commerce degree and focused in hospitality and food.
Nice.
And, you know, from Guelph, I really wanted some international experience. But I had spent all my time in the kitchen, and I really wanted to learn outside of the kitchen, bartending, serving, you know, front of house responsibilities, management. So I worked at a Michelin star hotel called Reed's. Chef Rob Braganolo from Toronto, who has had a bunch of celebrated restaurants in Toronto, got me the job there. And I'm really grateful to Chef Rob for that opportunity. And, you know, I had to, got to wear the bow tie and like the fancy shirt and like walk around with these trays. I'd have to bring people's bags up to their room. I got to bartend. I literally got to do all the front of house responsibilities. Not even that you would do at a restaurant, that you would do at a hotel. And that really taught me the level of service that was necessary and like really made me understand what it was like to work at a Michelin style restaurant or hotel, and like the level of detail and work that went into that. And by the time I was there for 4 months, and at the end of that, I was told, listen, we want you to stay on. And I was this close to dropping out of university and staying in Spain. Who wouldn't want to live in Mallorca, Spain? Like, oh, this is an incredible.
A dream. That age too. Oh my God.
A dream.
Right. So I did go back, and I started Food Dudes, I want to say a month when I got back, realizing I didn't want to get paid like shit anymore. I wanted to be my own boss. And knowing that I still needed to like learn so much about food and how to run a business. But I just said, fuck it. I'm going to learn as I go. And, you know, that's kind of how the journey began.
In terms of the structure of the business at the time, you know, you didn't choose to go, I guess, the traditional route of open up a restaurant, heavy overhead, you know, this big, massive investment. You know, what was the thought process behind that? Because I feel like anybody goes, I want to get into the food industry. The first thing they say is, I got to open a restaurant now, you know,
right.
Or it's always like, that's usually the route they take. And then maybe at that point end up adding catering to their repertoire and what they offer. You kind of did it the other way, I think.
Correct.
So maybe walk me through that. Why? Like, why you did that?
So true. Like, it's actually something I was going to mention. People usually get into catering afterwards because they're like, fuck, there's no money in restaurants.
Yeah, you gotta get this food out of here. Yeah, yeah.
We're going to pay the bills. Yeah. How are we going to show profits? And it was very important to me that, like, I didn't take money from my parents or have an investor. I wanted to do it on my own. And the easiest way to do that was catering. You know, but my mom lived at a condo. It was, and I lived there too. It was a 4-bedroom condo, 2 floors at Yonge and St. Clair, 30 Glen Elm. And I actually like walked by there a month ago just to like soak it all in, because that's really where it all began. We had this communal barbecue that like everyone in the condo had access to.
Yeah.
And like we'd be out there for like 4 hours and this like poor woman just wants to grill her salmon for dinner. I'm like, you gotta wait. I gotta get this shit out the door. And that was home base. And like in the wintertime, I would put all my starch and produce in our like car to keep it cold enough, because I ran out of fridge space in my mom's fridge.
Wow.
And for the first year of the business, like we did it out of my mom's condo. And like, that's a true story.
Wow.
And you know, it got to the point where we had saved up enough money to be able to go out, and there's a fish and chip shop called Chippies at Bathurst and Bloor in the Annex. And they had a small little shit box, 750 square foot space.
That'll do the job.
They're like, you can have this for $600 a month. Nice. And I was like so excited about it, right? We painted it and got these fridges. I still was working off like residential ovens at the time. And
cool.
We made it happen, man. And like from there, we went to a gangbanging nightclub called Empire in Yorkville.
Yeah.
There'd be like bullet holes in the couches. And like, you know, we'd be doing a tasting. I'd be like, no, those are from Heels. Don't worry.
It's part of the look. It's part of the design.
And like, it just was like what was necessary at the time. It's like we kept reinvesting in the business. I didn't take a dividend for the first 10 years of Food Dudes. And I think people, especially now, it's all about the quick fix, right?
Yeah.
You know, OnlyFans, so many ways to make money quick now, right? Like
sell your soul quick.
Crypto,
right? Yeah.
We saw the rise and fall of that real quick, right? But I think one thing I'm really proud of is that we kept reinvesting in ourselves and got it to a point where, you know, we could finally start taking dividends.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then the pandemic happened and I was like, fuck.
Perfect timing. Yeah.
Yeah.
But we preach that all the time too, about like, you know, reinvesting in your brand, reinvesting in yourself. We did the same thing. We didn't get paid for a long time from our own businesses. Just because you have overhead, you have employees and you got to keep the show going, you know?
Yeah.
So it's interesting you say that. How much, do you remember how much money you needed to start the brand itself?
Yeah. So the first business card was done on a Microsoft Word 98. My stepdad put that together for me. And so really like out the gate, you know, at that time we didn't even really have a website, but I think initially, like, I'll never forget, but a professor at university told me, he's like, find a way to make $100.
Yeah.
Just find a way to make $100. It's that easy. Once you found a way to make $100, do that 1,000 times.
Yeah.
And you'll be successful.
Yeah.
And sometimes quick it's math. That simple, right? Yep. So in terms of like the business, like we kept elevating our website, and, you know, I had a business partner, a 50-50 partnership. I told this on Gary's podcast. Shout out to Gary.
Yes.
We all know Gary, right?
So, of course.
And I told the story about how I had a 50-50 partnership that didn't work out.
In Food Dudes. Okay.
You know, he had a really bad gambling problem, and it really affected the business, so much so that all the money was drained out of the account at one point.
Oh, man.
And I thought about shutting down Food Dudes. And this is when we were at Chippies, and there was this server, barback at Ultra Supper Club. His name was Brent.
Okay.
And he just like always took such good care of us when we were there, whatever we needed, right? Like he was just there for us. And, you know, I remember venting to him the one night, and he's like, yo, I'll come work with you. He's like, but I'll tell you, he's like, your website's shit. And he goes, your brand's shit.
Yeah.
And so sometimes it's not, like, to answer your question, it's not about investing, like, financially in the business. Yeah. It's investing in the right person.
Yes.
So, like, Brent was willing to come on and change my whole brand. He went to a place called OCAD.
Yep.
Where he convinced these students there to work on this brand, you know, and promise them the world.
Yeah.
I don't know if that deal worked out in the end. On their side, I'm hoping it did. Yeah. Like, and I'm extremely grateful for everything that they did to help us. But, you know, Brent got profit share initially in Food Dudes.
Nice.
Then he became an owner of Food Dudes. He exited in 2018 when we had a new partner come in. But that was like, I always believed that, like, look at your strengths as a business owner or as an entrepreneur, and anything you're not good at, you know, go out and find it.
Yeah.
Right. So, like, I'm not good at office administration or dealing with negative feedback if an event went. I'm just so, like, attached to the brand.
Yeah.
I got it, like, tattooed on my arm. Right. It's like, so, like, I went out and got, her name's Lindsay Klein, and she's my partner as well, from, like, office administration to running, you know, the finances to the event coordination to dealing with customer service. And
when
HR.
Did she come on board? She came on board.
She came on around this, like, a couple, I'd say like 18 months after Brent did.
Okay. So this is like what, 2-3 years into the brand?
Yeah. This is probably like, what would the date be? I would say like 10 years ago, 11 years ago.
Cool.
And you know, so Brent and her created the two missing pieces that were stuff that I wasn't good at, right?
Yeah.
From branding, to like all the office admin and, you know, sales, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I was good at selling the brand. And once we did an event and they saw me, we had like a 90% chance of getting in another event from that.
Yes.
Cool. And then everything just started like speed rolling after that point.
Yeah.
But you said something on Gary's podcast, the Rise podcast, that that it resonated with us like crazy.
Yeah.
It was, you were saying something along the lines of that, the growth was very organic. Mm-hmm. You know, you just stuck to what you were good at. You made sure the product was good, the service was good, and then you never did outreach, you never did outbound sales. And that's something that me and Ernesto have never done. You know, we've been working together 6 years now on our companies, and we never once done that. We just focused on the brand, made sure that we offered good service, a good product, and that people would come. That, you know, I'm just agreeing with what you said on the pod, because I think that is the most organic way to build a real foundation. When you don't have to go chase business,
right,
and it kind of comes to you, A, you're doing something right, but I think B, you're building this foundation of inflow and revenue that is going to continuously come back, because you didn't have to beg for it. You just focused on what you knew was a good product and making sure that when you got that call, you were giving them the best service. And, you know, you probably have some of those people, you know, that have been clients for the last 15 years now.
Right. Well, let me just say, you guys are the last of a dying breed. I mean, like,
thanks, brother.
You know,
thanks.
I didn't know your age. I can tell you guys are younger than me by your hairline, the wrinkles and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, seriously, guys, like what you guys have been able to build and create and, you know, so many people from like your age group, just like, are lacking that motivation and that drive. And I don't want to discredit, because I'm sure there's millions of people that are your age out there that are doing it. But, you know, I do feel like during the pandemic, when in Toronto, you were able to sit on your couch and just receive passive income, right? Like during that time, you guys kept grinding, you know, you kept growing, you built your network. And to me, it's like, when I say the last of a dying breed, like, I just don't see that from the younger generations. Yeah. And I do believe that's what we need to get back to. Like that work ethic, right? Like,
because it's longer. It's the long route.
It's a long game.
And no one, and like you said, people want just instant gratification, right? So when you tell someone, for example, maybe you didn't take a pay or a dividend pay from your company after investing $1 million, they're going to be like, well, I would have taken some of that at least. I would have taken half of that at least, right? So It's something that we've always lived by. I think the pandemic as well really showed us you can't rely on external factors in your economy.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to always keep working on your brand and yourself. And I think that attracts people towards you anyways. 1,000%. Right? And then when someone comes to you, for example, they come to you for catering for an event, you already know they're sold. Mm-hmm. You didn't have to call them or cold call them or email them and try to convince them to use you. Once they're calling you, it's pretty much done.
There's no selling. Right? There's no selling. That's funny. Every time we have sort of our partner meetings with our team and our high up executives, and we're kind of trying to figure out what's our game plan and how to grow the sales and stuff. It's always like, and they're learning, right? It's the team below us being like, why don't we hire a sales team? We never thought about it. We've never done it before. And we're like, guys, the reason you're sitting here is because we've never hired a sales team.
Correct.
Yeah.
You know, we got to just dial back in on the brand. It's going to feel like we're just spending. And it's hard to, you know, attach an ROI to that spend.
Yes.
But it comes back tenfold. I'm like, guys, if we lock in 10 clients in the year that are, you know, our business model is for our agency, it's MRR, so it's monthly recurring revenue, right? We get our retainers and they pay. And I go, if we get 10 good clients every year that came to us because they saw us online, they saw who's behind the brand, they're with us forever.
Correct.
So we don't need to go get 100 clients that might leave us in 2 months because we cold called them, we cold emailed them.
We
tried to convince them. Like,
right.
It's okay. If we get 10 leads a year and they're fucking great leads, we're set. Like,
see,
we did our
something
job.
That, like, what you just said, like, is our whole philosophy at Food Dudes,
yeah.
Where it's like, at the end of the day, it's about client retention.
Exactly.
And it's not about how much, and I do feel we live in a world now where everybody's okay to just, like, get that one-time client,
yep.
And then, like, move on to the next.
Yes. Yep.
Where, like, if they just put in the extra effort, like, I believe in humanity, and I believe that we're loyal. Like, as humans, yes. Like, mm-hmm. If I get a haircut from someone, and they're respectful and cool, and they take care of me, I'm going to go back to that same person probably for a decade.
Forever.
Same with the restaurants as well. Like, I think that, like, when I go to a restaurant and I'm treated well, I'm going to be loyal and support that restaurant. And you have to, like, bet on humanity. And, like, true. You have to bet on the universe that if you take the long route, that you're going to be successful.
Yeah.
But the issue is, like, you may not see it overnight.
No, it takes and years.
You never will, man.
That's it. And, like, you... And that's the thing. You have to just keep going. And mm-hmm. I feel that we just keep switching. Oh, this doesn't work right away. I'm going to try this.
Yep.
I'm going to try that.
Yes.
You got to stick with something.
Yeah.
The universe, like, rewards people that keep working
no, you're right.
at something
Play the long
and put
game.
Their head
it's
the
playing
long
the long game.
Game.
I'm curious for you, maybe, and you know, you said ups and downs, and that's, mm-hmm. I think, with every business, but was there sort of a year in, like, maybe it's year 6, year 7, year 8 of the business where it was like, holy fuck, okay, finally. Like, we're finally in a position where I'm like, I feel good, I feel comfortable. Because I think that's always another thing when it comes to entrepreneurs. We don't realize it, I don't think, but we love the stress. Like, we love, like, as much mm-hmm. as we say we hate it, and we're
we
like,
love
oh,
the
fuck.
Spin. We love the
we
spin.
We love just the ups and downs. But yeah. But then you always kind of find yourself at a point, I think we just recently got there, truthfully, in the last year, where it's finally like, okay, there's a structure, there's the foundation, the team's built out. And, of course, it can always be better. But, like, there's a little bit of, like, safety here, you know? Where
right.
We're not like, holy shit, everything could blow up tomorrow.
Yeah.
But that's it. That's a thrill, though, right?
I know.
You
it
miss
is.
That feeling yep. sometimes.
Yep. You do. What year, I guess, maybe, or what at what time in the business did mm-hmm. you kind of get to that point where you're like, okay,
you could breathe
okay,
a little bit.
We can breathe a bit. Not take our foot off the gas, but we could breathe.
I would say, I'll always remember because it was right after my son was born.
Cool.
And I will say, like, for whatever reason, when you have a child, I don't know what it is, dude, but like,
we say this a lot.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
Like, so many people I've spoken to, they're like, yo, my revenue or my profitability went up like tenfold after
damn.
My son or daughter was born.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's common. Funny how that works. I'm not suggesting that everyone just starts going to have babies right now.
Yo, but, Adrian said, have a kid. I got to have a kid.
You're going to make millions of dollars. Yeah. Have a baby. But like, I think it was around. My son was born in 2014 in July. I would say by 2015 is when we started to see it starting to flow.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually moved we were at Bloke and Forth, which was a nightclub I was an owner of.
We were actually promoting there while you guys were doing stuff in there. Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah. Crazy.
So we were running our whole hustle out of the back
out of
there.
Kitchen, yeah.
And like we'd be like stopping traffic on Spadina. We'd have six events.
Yeah.
And we're like, these cars gotta get out. They gotta get to the events. And like we were like running our whole empire from that kitchen. And we outgrew the space. And I also realized, like, as much as I love nightclubs and, you know, like, enjoyed that, like, you know,
lifestyle,
I realized I really wanted to just focus. I realized we had something at that point.
Yeah, dial in now.
That was it. So we went and we got 10,000 square feet at Carlaw and Lakeshore.
Cool.
And I'll never forget it, but when I first saw the space, I looked at Brent and I'm like, we're never going to outgrow this space. I'm like, it's too big for us. But... you know what? It's worth the risk because at the time, Carlaw, you could get rent for like $10, $11 a square foot.
Yeah, the East End. Yeah, it was East End. Really like,
and now it's like $30 plus. I just renewed my lease.
Yeah.
And I'm like, Perry.
I'm like, you got
a break, man. Like, and he did. He took care of us. He's always taking care of us because we took on an additional 10,000 square feet. So we're up to 20,000 square feet there now. But I would say once we took that leap of faith, right? Like field of dreams moment.
Yeah.
If you build it, they will come.
Yeah.
And we started to have like growing issues like a couple of years later, like we had started to outgrow the 10,000 square feet and had to take on more. So that's when it really started flowing. I would say by 2019 is where we had somewhat of a monopoly over the venues you were able to work out of in Toronto.
Okay.
Cool.
A lot of my competitors and a lot of other catering companies really started to despise us and dislike
us. That's when you know you're doing something right.
Yeah, and they were like, you guys aren't playing fair. Like, you're working outside deals with all these venues and stuff like that. And I'm just like...
You could have too, bro.
I was being generous. Like, sometimes you have to be overly generous to see the bigger picture.
Yeah. To win the business.
And that's it. And I saw that venues weren't making a lot of money as well. We actually invested in a venue, and I'm like, the math doesn't make sense here. Mm-hmm. So in order to make it make sense, here's what we're willing to do. But even more than that, I don't think it really was those deals we were making with the venues. It was the amount of care that we put into every event, from the food. Like, we make everything from scratch. You know, like, we do training sessions with our team. We don't fire our team every January. We keep them over the winter. We empower them. We take care of them. I think it was like the culture that we built. And like, if you ask anyone that throws events in Toronto, it's like the answer is, well, you got to have Food Dudes.
All the time.
Yeah.
And even us, we were throwing events a lot too. Yeah. And every time it was mentioned, Food Dudes every time.
And it's like, you can say that it was like, oh, because we made these side deals. But at the end of the day, when you back it up with the quality of your food and service, and we were getting to a point where we were doing 20 events in a night. And like, that, I had that moment where I was like, I have to find a way to standardize this because I can only be at one of these events. Like, we put so much effort into, we built these like videos of like me making every recipe. And then like my business partner built this app. It's called Food Dudes Connect, where like has every video. So like every appetizer, like Ernesto could put on a chef uniform and like go to an event and be able to probably make, because the videos are like show exactly how to create this. And like no other catering company's putting in that amount of work or effort. Like that comes out of our pocket.
Yeah.
It goes back to reinvesting in your business. If you want to scale any company, like scalability is how you profit. Like you guys have the capability online between, you know, social media and YouTube to like world your oyster in terms of how many viewers you could get and people that you could build partnerships with. You know, in the food industry, specifically catering, scalability is everything.
Yeah.
So we had to take that amount of events on a Saturday to reach our profitability and revenue goals. But there was a time period where like we would be probably getting around 10 to 15% negative feedback.
Okay.
Which wasn't okay with me because like we wanted to hit that like 95 to 90. You're never going to be perfect. Yeah. You strive for 100%, you know, but you're not going to get there. But as long as you have the ambition to try to strive for perfection, you'll be better off than most companies out there. And for me, that was like the turning point where I'm like, fuck, we're doing these amount of events. And then it got to a point where, like, I wasn't even needed on a Saturday night to go to one of the events, and I could just pop in at a few of the different events and, you know, shake hands with the client, check in on the chef, make sure they were all right, see the deficiencies, the items that work well, the items that don't work well. Every venue's different. Some have deep fryers, some don't. Some have convection ovens, some don't. And, like, figure out that whole end of it. And at that point, it was kind of just game over, where, like, we just, you know, kept growing and exceeding expectations and, you know, getting a lot of, you know, customer retention. And our turnover, like, with our staff as well, like, once, like, we always have the saying, it's like, they'll leave, but they'll always come back. You know, they go to get a taste of what's out there.
Come running
like,
back.
They didn't treat us like they did at Food Dudes, right?
We said the same. It's so funny. We say the same thing. We're like, with our team, like, I hate saying, like, employees. Like, we always say team. Because, like, we don't really, like, look at things, like, from a hierarchy perspective, especially when we don't have to. But we always say, we're like, guys, you're not stuck here, eh? We're not, like, there's no gun to your head. You're not shackled into working with us. Go ahead.
Correct.
But and how many times it's come true, it's rung true where they leave, and they're like, fuck, I did not get the same treatment. Yeah, maybe I got an extra 5,000, 10,000 a year, and that's fine. But to be treated like shit somewhere else and no respect, like, at that point, money can't buy that.
Correct.
Right? That respect factor and working, you know, working in with a team and a culture of people that you want to be around. Because I think people forget that. Like, oh, I can go make, you know, instead of 70,000 this, I can go make 80,000 with these guys. It's like, yeah, but they don't fucking care about you.
Yeah.
There's, like, no culture.
There's a big difference. So we say the same thing, which is crazy. But I think, you know, in terms of, like you said, that point, that breaking point and that breakthrough moment, you know, like you were saying, how now events could run without you.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's something that me and him have spoken about a lot internally with our businesses is, and you know, some people are not going to like that we say this, but I don't think you have a real business until it can operate without you.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you guys do that in your industry?
It's crazy building out teams. Okay, like, other than this podcast, for example, where we need to be in front of the camera, but we enjoy it. It's something that we never want to stop doing.
Yeah.
But now it's the back end, right? And we're building out other shows and other programs and stuff like that that, you know, are bringing in revenue, and we're building out teams behind, you know, those creators and those shows that are operating without us.
You know what's crazy? I was driving down here over the bridge. I was in Midtown, went through Wynwood, came down, and I was thinking, like, men in general, like, screw the cameras or the microphones and everything. It's like, when's the last time you just sat down and, like, had a conversation?
Yes,
right?
Yes, that's how we love it.
That's why you guys, like, this isn't work for you guys.
Yeah.
It's work, but, like, in the sense that, same with me when I cook, or, like, I love being at my restaurants. I love the energy. So when you find something that you just love to do, you can't replace that. And talk about organic. Like, it doesn't get more organic and raw than this. Cause, like, we really struggle. Men in general struggle to connect and, like, have these conversations, these, like, in-depth emotional, you know, yes, they're mostly talked about business and finance, but, like, it's so important what you said, like, my dad, he gave me lots of great advice over the years. But one thing he said to me is, like, you need to find a way to make money while you're sleeping.
Yeah.
Because he's a lawyer. So he just clocks in, logs every minute. Trust me, lawyers, they log
every minute. We know. We learned, right?
So I think, like, for lawyers, but, like, I'm like to my dad, like, drop your knowledge on 20 lawyers underneath you.
Yeah.
Right? It can still be your law firm, you know. But, like, he didn't even have that capability to do that. He gave his son that advice. Uh-huh. And maybe he realized too that, like, fuck, if I had done that earlier on in my career, I could just kept this firm forever. And, you know, but he's the type of guy, he's going to be working until he's long gone. Like, he like loves to work, and I love to work as well. But it got to a point where I realized, like, it's exactly what you said, you know, a business, you know, has to outgrow the entrepreneur.
Yeah, the face, the person.
And it got to a point, and I think it's because of the name Food Dudes. If I called it Adrian Nyman Catering, you'd always expect me there.
Correct.
True.
But now people take pride in being a food dude, female or male, which is great. Like, we probably have more females that work for us than males, as I mentioned earlier.
But that's a testament to the culture you built.
Yeah. Right.
Right. But even in terms of, let's say, somebody like your father, who probably has done well for himself, I imagine. But, you know, it's really focused on him clocking hours in, clocking out. You know, I think a lot of people might fall into that because, again, it's the long game when you want to build other people. So that means less money in your pocket up front, right? While you got to go pay this guy, while you're training him, you're paying him. That's money that you're not taking home.
Right.
Again, you said 10 years you went without taking a dividend.
Correct.
We're very close to that. But that's because we said this business needs to operate without us. And when it gets to that point, we'll see the money.
Oh, yeah.
And we're okay to wait, you know.
But then it will be plentiful and passive and, like, and just keep coming in. And, like, you know, the one thing, too, about, like, investing in your team and over the years, I did a lot of profit share deals. Everyone wants ownership, right?
Yeah.
I want equity. I want ownership. And I don't think they realize, like, what comes with ownership or equity, right? And I'm sure you guys have had issue as well. It's like, sometimes it's just about securing the bag. Like, get paid well. And I think we live in a world, like, now where people are starting to realize that, like, being an owner isn't all it's cracked up to be. Oh. The liability, the risk, the stress. And when you empower your staff, like, I empower my team, you know, it gets to a point now where, like, even some of my proteges or people I've mentored, you know, speak to me as if they're, like, they're my boss. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because they're in it every day and, like, they're going to all the events and stuff like that. And they have no problem being like, no, this is what we're going to do and this is why we're going to do it. And, like, I'm just like, say what? Yeah, I'm like, but I got to put my ego aside because at the end of the day, it's all about, like, what if I really think about what I care most about, I care about Food Dudes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, like, I'm okay to have a disagreement. And there was, for so long, I'm like, you will not speak to me this way. You will not disrespect me this way. Yeah. I gave you this opportunity. I made you who you are. Right? We've all had that talk, right? Yeah. But we're just power tripping. Yeah. Like, if you take the ego out of it and you just let it be, it's like, if as long as what they're saying is for the betterment of the business and not for the betterment of themselves.
True.
So that's once you can distinguish that difference, for me, I was like, okay, fuck, you care, you know, you're putting the business first as well. And you might be speaking to me in a way that I got a bit of an issue with, but I'm going to let you run with it and let them make the mistake or let it be something that you can praise them for afterwards. Say, we didn't see eye to eye on that, but you were right and I was wrong.
Yeah.
And, like, for them to hear that from their boss or, like, from an owner, like, it's so important. Yeah. You've got to put the ego aside sometimes for your business and brand to really evolve.
Of course. And I want to even talk about, like, we mentioned it's kind of glorified being an entrepreneur now, right? Yeah. Like, everybody wants to be an entrepreneur. They see the Instagram posts. They see the net worth. And they're like, I want that, too.
The highlight reel.
I want to be a baseball player seeing all these straight contracts.
Up. Yeah,
100%, but 100%. I think what's not talked about a lot is the dark side of it.
Yeah,
and the maybe the negatives that come from it or the stress. So maybe talk a little bit about, you know, when you were in the grinding phase of it and you had those 15, 16, 17 hour days.
Right.
What were some of the things you were going through personally, maybe on a mental note or maybe just, you know, in life? Like, how did you get through those? Because me and him have been working our ass off for together, maybe 7 years, not together, maybe 10 years.
Wow.
And there's times where it's really tough, you know, and it's tough mentally. You don't really have balance in your life.
Zero.
You can't really see your family as much, your friends as much. So talk about that phase that you went through and maybe what you learned from that.
Yeah. So I think people have short memories in the sense that, like, they probably look at me now and they see me come in and, you know, they don't know that, like, I've been working on a deal till 2 a.m. the night before or whatever it is that I'm doing. They don't see me as much in the kitchen as they used to.
Yeah.
Or when they do see me in the kitchen, they're like, why is Adrian here, like, cutting this and doing this? And, like, they don't know I'm really just watching all of them. I don't have to be in there doing that. But, like, that's my way of staying relevant and keeping my hands on the product and, like, seeing what's what. But the hours and the time that went into it, specifically during that time period, came at a cost. And it came at a cost for me personally. I've struggled with addiction. I think, like, in my industry, you know, like, most chefs have struggled with addiction. And, you know, I'm fortunate enough that it didn't catch me. You know, I think we all get to that point. We have to make a decision. But it came at the cost of friendships. I spent a lot of my 20s and my 30s building this business and not being able to hang out with my friends. You know, I've lost a lot of close friendships because of it.
Yeah.
I see some groups of friends, they've been friends since high school and they're still getting together. Yeah. I'm like, yeah. How the fuck is this?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like, how'd you guys manage that?
Yeah. It's just like that. Like, to me, that's like, wow. But like, it came at a cost, and it came at a cost personally. It came at a cost in my relationships, my closest relationships with my family, you know, my children. You know, just this morning, my son asked, he's like, Dad, when are you leaving again? You know, and like, fortunately, I'm going to be able to be here for a good stretch now. But it was always the same, being like, Daddy will be back next week, you know, and I got to go and I got to do this. And I don't think they realize until they're older, yeah. Like, and you know what? It's okay if they don't ever realize, like, you only have so much, you have that window, right?
Yeah.
And then your kids are just like, all right, Daddy's not cool anymore. You know, yeah. Like, we want to do our own thing. So it came at a cost physically, mentally, you know, I struggled with addiction. I had to work through that. It affected my relationships. And as an entrepreneur, you know, like, we're not meant to live a domestic lifestyle. We just aren't.
Yeah.
My therapist told me that, and it made perfect sense,
yeah.
Right? Shout out to everyone that has a therapist. Yeah. You're still cool if you have a therapist, yeah. You know what I mean? Mental health is a real deal, and you need someone to speak to. So nothing to be ashamed at about that. But I think for me, like, if you're a creator or you're an entrepreneur, and like I'm thinking, like, I might be looking at you, but I'm thinking about either a recipe
it's
or
all
a
around
dish.
Your head right now. I'm looking at you, but it's all around your head. Yeah.
And like, we've all been there, and like, it's something now that at this point in my life, I really want to like work on being present, work on building those relationships, making up for that time, and spending time with my family. You know, my kids, like, they're 9 and 7, and you know, I'm going to be 40 next month, and
it's a big year.
Yeah. And like, instead of like feeling guilty about not always being at work right now, which is crazy. Like, I feel more guilty about not being at work than I feel guilty. Like, you just feel guilty all the time.
Yep.
I'm guilty when I'm away from my kids or from like missing friends' birthday parties or family birthday parties. And, you know, and then you feel guilty. Like, you just always feel guilty. Yeah, so you have a choice to make. And for me at this point, it's really about prioritizing those relationships. Well, you could work till the day you die. I will be working till the day I die, but you know, you have to find that balance. And as I enter my 40s, putting my physical and mental health first, and those like key relationships in my life that are so dear to my heart, focusing on that as much as I focus on the work.
Yep.
And that's my goal.
But but man, everything you're saying is so fucking true.
Yep.
Like, entrepreneurs, we don't get a fucking second of peace.
No, man.
It's between work, business, relationships, friendships. You're guilty for not being there. You're guilty for not being here. And then when you said this, I'm like, my girlfriend knows this all too well. She's talking to me. I'm like staring at her. She probably thinks I'm so dialed in on the conversation. She's gonna watch this and laugh. But I'm like,
you're just thinking of
what's going on with that contract. Yeah. Is this, did that get finished? Yeah. Oh, did he end up doing this? And then the bank and the finances, and did that wire go through? And then, and you're just like, you're never there. You're there, but you're not there.
Correct.
And I think that, in my opinion, it's funny. I have these conversations with my friends who, I have like two really good friends that I always make sure I keep in touch with, because I'm trying to build that balance, and they're not really entrepreneurs. And one thing I always tell them, like, well, guys, like, for me, the most important trait of like to be a successful entrepreneur is your stress management.
Mm-hmm.
How much stress can you manage and still operate? So like, how high can your stress levels be, but you still operate? Like, that's, and I think like, then that circles back to like being, feeling guilty and having this on your mind and all these things. And so your stress levels are always high.
Correct.
And I think as an entrepreneur, I'll speak for myself. Like, I find it very, I don't really have many things or almost anything that brings my stress levels down. I go to sleep stressed. I wake up stressed.
Right.
So it's like, what?
You're on a hamster wheel.
Yeah.
You're literally on a hamster wheel. And like, it's cost me some very, you know, important relationships in my life. And like, some advice I can give to you is just like, don't wait to find that balance. You know what I mean? But don't give up on your dreams either. Cause like, then you end up like resenting the relationship.
Yeah.
You didn't let me do this, or like, But like at the end of the day, there's only so many hours in a day. Prioritizing your sleep, your physical health, you know, taking time to eat and you know, and it takes so much from like the partner.
Yeah.
It takes so much from the people in your life to support you through this.
Yeah.
Because it comes at a cost for them as well.
Yeah, it does.
So they either understand it or they don't.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, I don't know about you guys, but we're not meant to work 9 to 5s.
Yeah.
We're not meant to work Monday to Friday, 9 to 5.
No.
My phone, I'm available 24/7. Same. And that's just how it is. And I can tell just by, like, what you guys have built and what you guys are doing, where you guys are right now, like this is what it takes and it's going to pay off for you guys.
Yeah. Like, but I feel it's like you're saying, like it affects the people around you and all those things and they got to be willing. And then it's up to you to make a decision, right? Mm-hmm. You're saying like, on one hand, I hear you when you say find the balance, but on the other hand, I also look at it just from my personal experience. Like if you really like our goal is $1 billion valuation. Like we want $1 billion valuation.
Fuck with everything
we do. Yeah, let's go. So
like, let's go.
I don't know if balance is in the fucking
it's not in the cards.
Is in the cards right now.
Not
I'll
that.
Balance no. when I fucking get there. And again, I love my parents. I love my girlfriend. I love everyone around me. I love my friends. If you can understand what I'm doing and it's not easy, all the power to you. I love you and I want to keep you around. If you don't, unfortunately, I have to make the decision that I'm putting this business and my dreams first.
Yeah. Well, then, and then the people that will support that are your real friends, brother.
Yeah.
Because if you want something that big, you don't got time, man. You don't got time.
And even for you with the balance, like looking back, like if you did try to balance it, you might have not have got to this point.
Would you get here? That's the question.
Right?
It all worked out. Like, that's what I'm trying to say. It's like, this wasn't by coincidence, and anyone that thinks that is just a hater.
Yeah,
they really are.
Facts,
a lot of people would be like, "Oh, he's only this successful because his parents gave him all the money to do this."
Yeah, it's
like,
always excuses.
That's all bullshit.
Yep.
At the end of the day, the universe—I go back to the universe—is watching.
Yep.
Yeah. And knows the amount of work and time you put into something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And for you guys, if that's your goal, and by the way, that's a reachable goal in your. In hospitality, it's pretty difficult to get there. You have to make a decision on what your goal is. And then as soon as you get that goal, I can tell you, you're going to get to a billy and you're going to be like, I got to get to 10 billy now because this company did that and we're better than them and this is why we're better. But eventually, you get to a point. And I got like almost 10 years on both of you guys where it's like, you got to make a decision of what you want your life to look like. And at the end of the day, I don't plan on slowing down. I have so much that I want to accomplish still and do. But
you can work smarter now instead of harder.
Well, that's exactly
right. With the resources you've built, the team you've built. Right. And that's something else I want to get into is you started investing in restaurants.
Correct.
Right. When did that happen? And why did you want to do that?
So at Bloke and Forth, we had a supper club.
Yeah.
And like I was running at like a Michelin star restaurant. Like you got these heirloom chips and everything. And like we had the reservations at 6:30, 7:30 all timed out.
Yeah.
But everybody just came in at 9:30, 2 hours late because they didn't give a fuck. And they were just there to get shit faced. 20 people when it was supposed to be 8 people.
Yeah.
And like the chits are coming in like a toilet paper roll. Like I'm just like, I realized very quickly that this isn't a restaurant. And we at that point wanted to prove to the city and to ourselves that we could open a successful restaurant and be known more than just a catering business.
Yes.
So we opened Rasa at Harvard and Spadina.
That was the first one.
That was the first one. And to this day, like that's the one that is like my baby, my pride and joy. That's where we created the Rasa Chop Salad, which is one of the most celebrated salads in the city.
Yeah.
I actually got that tattooed on my arm as well.
Nice.
Which is pretty sick.
Nice.
But so that restaurant, to me, we built it for $350,000. I had a client that came in early on, and it always stuck with me. I'm like, how's everything going? He's like, it's going great. He's like, when are you going to finish the renovation?
Yeah.
And I'm just like, that's a good chirp. I like that. But like, you know, to me, it's like we saw the quickest ROI on that. We have a massive patio there.
Yeah.
What we're able to create from that space, the talent that's came into that kitchen, the amount of chefs, and all those dishes have been like, a think tank for us to put on our catering menu or evolve and grow.
Yep.
And you know, it's a place that's very special to a lot of people. It's very special to me as well. And then for whatever reason after that, I just got the itch and we just started opening concept after concept, and we're up to over 10 restaurant concepts. And I say concepts because, like, if you look at Pantry or Chop Up, we have 4 or 5 locations. I own Blondie's Pizza. We actually just...
Well, Blondie's is bomb. I didn't know that was yours.
Yeah, we sold it.
Okay.
I got that tattooed on my arm as well. This whole sleeve is like our brand over the last decade.
Got a whole menu there, yeah.
But we sold out of Blondie's 6 months ago, so we're no longer involved.
Congrats,
but
bro.
We're really proud of that brand and what we created with it. We had 7 locations there. And then we opened up just restaurants, and then there'd be chefs that would come in that I knew were going to do their own concepts, David Schwartz being one of them. And I invested in him with my partners to do Mimi and Sunny's, which are 2 Chinese concepts that are very successful in Toronto. And now I'm at a point where it's like we brought catering down to Miami 2 years ago, and it's been a grind. I'm not going to lie with you. Yeah. Like
new city,
new country. There's 30 million people in the state of Florida. Yeah. There's 30 million people in the country of Canada, right? Yep. So, like, I'm excited. You know, we brand, like, the business is called Food Dudes USA because eventually I'd like a hub in New York and in California. And, you know, I think I got enough gas in the tank to really, like, take everything we've learned in Toronto from catering and to bring that to the U.S. And right now we're in that. Once again, like, we're outgrowing the kitchen we're in, and we got to find a new operation. And do we want a grocery store attached to it? Do I want to do a restaurant down here? Do I want to bring any of my restaurant brands from Toronto here? Like, look at some of these places, even like around where you guys are. Like, for anybody watching or listening, we're around Brickell right now, and like, people are putting $8 to $10 million in CapEx into these restaurants, right? I have no desire to do that.
Yeah.
Like, to me, it's just like, by the time you make your money back, you're not the cool restaurant in town anymore. It's just financially, there's so many easier ways to make money.
Yeah.
You know, people always ask me, they're like, I'm thinking about investing in a restaurant. I'm like, you're fucking crazy.
Yeah.
Like, how can you say that to me? You have like all these concepts. Yeah. I'm like, 'cause I'm crazy.
Yeah. But you also have so much, you have so much experience at this point too. And you know what works, what doesn't work.
Right.
Right. I'm sure there's, has there ever been a place that you've had to shut down?
There has. Okay. Like, we had Oma. We didn't have to shut down.
Okay.
There's not one place that actually went like belly up.
That didn't work.
Yeah. Like, there's been locations that haven't worked.
True.
Okay. That we've switched to like another concept.
Okay.
There hasn't been one that we've had to shut down. Now, there's ones that have performed better than others for obvious reasons. And a lot of that comes down to like the build out. When we opened the sister restaurant to Rasa called Sarah, Brent met with these like design groups. Like, there was guys wearing capes coming into my office. And I'm like, who the fuck is this guy?
I just wanted someone to paint.
Literally wearing a cape. Yeah. And I'm like, what the hell is this going to cost me? Yeah. And he's putting like Japanese wood in the kitchen. Yeah. And I'm like, no one can even see this.
Yeah,
at
yeah.
the time, it was a closed kitchen. We ended up opening up the kitchen. And unfortunately, the budget for that restaurant, given that it's only an 80-seat restaurant, it just was not economical.
Yeah.
And I was pretty distracted at the time. I just had the birth of my daughter. And I had a lot going on with other businesses and everything in my life and personally. And I kind of took my eye off the prize. And, you know, I hold myself responsible for that. And my partners, we all hold each other responsible for letting the budget just get out of control.
Yeah.
And we're finally, like, whole. I think like 5 years. Okay. 5 years.
You literally learn.
That's not a good return on investment.
No. But you learn your biggest, like your biggest lessons when you lose the biggest amount of money. Usually,
correct.
You know, that's what we've kind of noticed too.
I'm grateful too that we made it back, but like,
yeah.
it just was like it's just not sustainable, and I'm so glad I learned that. And so like, there's been lots of failures along the way.
Of course.
Luckily, no like shutdowns.
True. Good.
I have to
good
like
for
think
you.
Back.
Are you building a lot of these to exit as well, like you did with Blondie's, or are you trying to keep the portfolio?
We're cooking up something, something special right now. You know, I think like I have no intention of exiting what I do on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
But we're working on something, on a deal and something real big right now. Yeah. That, you know, will change the future of the company and for all the key people in it.
Yeah. I actually want to flip the script now, because we mentioned, okay, you investing into restaurants, investing into, I'm sure, chefs and things like that. But I'm guessing, and correct me if I'm wrong, at some point you took investment into Food Dudes.
Yeah. So in 2018, when Brent wanted to exit, for personal reasons, we'll leave it at that. Love him. He's my brother. I had to go out and find an investor. Mm-hmm. I partnered with the Kimmel family, Mike Kimmel.
Okay.
He's like, couldn't have asked for a better partner. His family is one of the wealthiest in Canada, but, you know, the children, what they've gone to do, even that the family like has the wealth that they have, like, and what they've created in hospitality. He's the brainchild behind Planta, and David Grubman's partner down here in all of his restaurants, and couldn't ask for a better partner. So he came in. I kept a majority of the business, Food Dudes, and he bought out Brent and took I sold a small piece as well. So, you know, and we've gone in, like, I'll never forget, like, during the pandemic, we were down here in Florida and we were touring a hotel down here that they had just acquired. And he was just like putting rufflings in my ears. He's like, yeah, he's like, I think we're going to take over at Hotel X, like the food and beverage there. I'm like, okay. I'm like,
all right. Good to know.
And like 10 days later, he's like, yo, we're taking over and the NHL bubble is coming to Hotel X. Like, we were shutdown mode at that time. Like, we were down 99% of revenue. Yeah. I laid off over 250 employees. Fuck. Like, it was sickening, like, how I was feeling at that time, like, about everything, not even knowing if my business, everything I had built, finally starting to get dividends, finally starting to see the fruits of my labor, right? Yes. And all of a sudden, the NHL bubble went into Hotel X, five hockey teams, the Boston Bruins, the Tampa Bay Lightning, the Philadelphia Flyers, the Pittsburgh Penguins, like, and I'm like a hockey guy, right? So for me, this is like a fucking dream. And we had 10 days, Mike's partner, Brandon, me and him basically like had to take on most of this project, and had to hire over 220 people again, because we were going to be 24/7 operational. Wow. There was like 400 people coming into the hotel. They're athletes that wanted breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Mm-hmm. And we had to get swabbed in our nose and tested every day. I was there for 40 days. That's another chapter in the book. It's called Bubble Boy. So that one's going to be in there as well. And couldn't have done it without my business partner and executive chef, Derek Wasser. He was in there with me every step of the way, and, you know, Brandon as well, and what we created. And that was kind of a testing ground where, like, Mike, I'll never forget, he called me the night before. He's like, don't fuck this up. Thanks for the point.
I appreciate that.
So, but so if we did well, we were going to get the hotel. And since then, we've gone on to open three restaurants in the hotel, and we do all the events and catering on the grounds there. And it's something that we're really proud of, that really helped grow the business exponentially and wouldn't have happened without Mike and his family.
Yeah, the reason I ask is because it's funny. Every time we sit in front of, you know, an entrepreneur like yourself, I'm always trying to get knowledge for myself, you know? Like, right. I'm thinking about where we're at, right? And we've I'd say over the last, 8 to 12 months, have received a lot of inquiries, and without us really looking, of people who want to get involved, investors, people want to kind of throw money at whatever it is that we're doing, and we've been very picky with who we entertain, because we look at it, and maybe you can give me shed some light on this, but we look at it and say, like, if it's just money, we're not really looking for a partner,
right?
But they got to come with some value, some strategic value outside of just dollars, because we can go get the dollars from anyone if we want. I know that people are going to hear that and think that's crazy, but I think you can understand, like, you got revenue, you've built something, you can go find the money. It's not really an issue. It's more about why you're bringing in a certain person or a party or a group, and, you know, what are they bringing to the business? Now, that's how we look at it. I'm assuming for you, based on Mike, it sounds like that was kind of your headspace as well.
Yeah, like, so to end, like, it's actually a really good question and something that I had made, like, a lot of mistakes with early on. Like, I'd be so willing to give up profit share and equity, like, initially to, like, see through my vision. And then it wouldn't work out and you have to buy out the person. And it's just, like, yeah. all that really, like, yeah. like, takes a toll on you. It's pretty simple. It's like, you said it best. Like, you can go out and get money anywhere. The question is if the strategic partner that you're bringing in, can they grow your revenue X amount and put more dollars in your pocket? So it's not about them cutting you a check, because they are going to cut you a check.
Yeah.
And you're going to get a valuation of whatever it may be. And in your industry, I'm not sure what the multiples look like for times the EBITDA. But at the end of the day, what are they going to bring to the table? If they're bringing X amount of dollars or have an idea or a software or whatever it may be that will allow you guys to do 5X, 6X, 8X, 10X more, then it's a no-brainer. And sometimes we lose sight of that where we're like, no, I'm never selling, you know, until I get this amount. But you think anyone that got to $1 billion business didn't have to...
No, they own 1% of their business by the end of it.
Well, there you go. And that's something you want to protect as well, is like, at the end of the day, you guys want to protect your interest and you know, keep that 51% till you get to a certain point. But at the end of the day, you can only grow it so much.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like I'm pretty close to the ceiling in Toronto in terms of what we're able to do.
Yeah.
We can't get into the Four Seasons Hotel. We can't, you know, take on more than the amount of events that we're already doing without sacrificing the quality of our product or service. True. So it's like, at the end of the day, you bring in a strategic partner that, yes, that's going to write you a check because you're diluting down, or you're in a situation, if you're in a startup where you are diluting down before you've seen a dollar. And that happened to me in the cannabis business, which, you know, I don't want to say was a failure, but that's been a tough road for us. I mean, and you look at Canopy, it's been a real tough road if you've seen what they're trading for right now. But I think the answer is like, if they're going to help grow your business X amount financially, what, like, if you own 100% of a $10 million business or like 50% of a $100 million business, right?
It's like, easy math.
Yeah, you just figure out the math, and if it makes sense, it's worth doing.
Yeah,
and still trying to find a way to keep control, at least operational control, or the day-to-day control of your business.
Yeah,
were you ever like that? Like, you didn't want to sell any shares?
Yeah, it got to a point where, like, I was really like, I'll give you guys profit share, profit share, profit share. I kept, like, that was my go-to.
Yeah,
to get dangling the carrot, right? And I always, like, anyone that I've done business with could never say that I didn't pay them exactly what was owed or deserved. Sometimes it even, like, to my detriment. But, like, I think, like, for me, it was really important to keep 51% of the business. And now I'm at a point where it's like, if I'm going to lose that 51%, it's going to come at a big price tag. And it's going to come with someone that can take the business. That's the other thing. You have to separate yourself from the business.
Okay.
Right? We don't do that. We're so intertwined.
We are the business. Yeah.
We are the business. Yeah. It's on, like, I'm just like, it's my identity. It's my legacy. It's whatever the fuck you want to drum up in your head. At the end of the day, Food Dudes is its own, like, it's like having a baby.
Yeah.
Eventually that baby's its own human being.
It's true.
It's going to do what it wants to do.
Yeah.
And for me, like, if I look at Food Dudes and I really care about Food Dudes as a brand and as its own entity, then you have to separate yourself. And if there's someone that can break through that ceiling that I've taken it to and reach a new ceiling, I'm finally at the point where I'm like, okay, let's talk. Let's see where it goes.
Because I know you mentioned, I think, in an article or on a podcast that you have restaurants with Food Dudes and then you have some personally as well.
Correct? Yeah.
So would that be the play to continue? Let's say something happened with Food Dudes where you sell a good portion of it.
Right.
Would you continue with the restaurants as well?
Yeah, like the ones I'm invested in, I'm like a minority, smaller.
So what's your role in those ones, let's say? Let's say you go into a restaurant.
Connecting the dots.
Okay.
And like giving advice where it's needed.
True.
Like someone like David Schwartz, I've said this on podcasts recently, where like he was going to do it with or without me. I was able to help him and guide him to find the right partners and True. And you know, and be fortunate enough to work with him.
Yeah.
But like, if I was in his ear every day and going into the restaurant and like, change this dish, do this, do that. It's like, I don't have the time or the energy at this point, but like, he's someone that like truly inspires me, from a chef perspective, but he's kind of like you guys, like the last of a dying breed.
Yeah.
He actually just won like the Young Michelin Chef of the Year award, cool. which I'm so proud of him. I think they snubbed us by not giving us a Michelin star, Mimi. Sonny's got Bib Gourmand, which was pretty cool. But for me, like, I'm a minority like shareholder in these businesses, and those ones I invest were like the Food Dudes restaurants I have the control of. And if I were to ever do a deal, it would probably include
The other ones.
Yeah.
True.
Food Dudes, Pantry, Rasa, Sarah, you know, our, like at Hotel X, like what we're a part of, like all that, because it's so intertwined. And though, like, we all work together, it'd be really hard to separate.
True.
If you go to our website and stuff like that, and that's probably how it would play out.
Speaking to Food Dudes, do you have an idea of what like total revenue from day one to today looks like?
Like what we've done in revenue?
Yeah.
Yeah, I could probably figure that out. Like year one, we did $109,000 in revenue.
Fuck, not bad.
Year one, that's a good year one.
Year one, yeah. And then it spiked to 300 and then to 600. So let's call that a milli. And then I would say we're probably 200 to 250 million.
Wow.
Yeah, in revenue. And now we're at probably around like 40 a year. Wow. I want to make it really clear though, because like everyone sees that. They're like, that's revenue. So that's like sales, guys, right? Yes. And like in hospitality, you're making shekels. So like
you're hitting like
10%, right? Yeah. If you're lucky, you know, 50. Now catering, higher. Restaurants, if you're lucky, hit around 10%. More catering, overhead. You can hit at the level we're doing now and how much we pour back into our team and to like make sure these events go well. You're looking at 15 to 20%.
Yeah. Sure.
Right? Especially at the level that we're on.
Is more of your revenue coming from catering than the restaurants?
Yeah. If you look at a pizza pie, catering 70%. Like, I don't live in Rosedale or have a house in Miami because of the restaurants.
Yeah.
It's just like the catering is, because there's no ceiling. If you have a 100-seat restaurant, you know you can only do 200 covers in a night.
Yeah.
So you know the most you can do is 15 to 20K.
Yeah.
In catering, there's never, you know, no, you go out, you get a, you know, a 10,000 person event.
True.
Plus all the other events you're doing that night. It's like, and that's why like the catering and events business is so lucrative and so attractive to someone that's interested to buying you. If it was just restaurants, it's very hard to sell a restaurant.
True.
Unless you're like major food group or like, you know, David Grubman's had a lot of success here, but they're like normal fine dining restaurants. They have like a lounge to them, or they have like it's an experiential restaurant, right? So in order to like sell, and like the real direction to go is quick service, you know, like Sweetgreen, right? Chipotle,
true. McDonald's. Those guys crush, like,
Well, even the salad place.
Shake Shack. Right?
The salad place you mentioned.
Yeah, Chop Hop. So that's our, so that's my next big wave, like really focusing. I wanted to create a concept that is good for you and that's healthy. And like that, not to say that there aren't healthy options at Pantry, which there are. The pizza business for me, like, I love pizza, but at the end of the day, I wanted to create something that's forward thinking and that like is like healthy and that it's gluten free and that like is delicious still. Like, we think of salads, we think of like soggy mixed greens and store-bought dressing, right? So for me, like, we've been able to create, now we're up to, I think, 7 salads, which are like, they have 18 to 20 ingredients in them and they all pop and they all make sense. And like, these interesting proteins you can add, and like you feel good after you eat it, right? And even our wraps, like, they're on gluten free, you know, as opposed to like GMO corn tortillas and stuff like that. So everything we do at Chop Hop is health conscious, and like we think about that, and it's important to me moving forward to do a concept that like is good for humanity, good for you.
And that's like quick service, like you mentioned.
That's what you can scale, right? And lower to build out. You can build out spots for $300,000 to $600,000. You can see a quicker return on that.
Yeah.
Plus, like, you don't have your staff working till midnight or 1 a.m. in the morning. You don't have to worry about alcohol or theft. Everything's card now. It's cashless. So, like, there's just so many benefits. And, like, look at what it costs for rent, right? So you only need 800 to 1,200 square feet as opposed to needing 2,500 to 3,500, right? So to me, quick service, if you want to build a concept to be able to sell, is probably the route to go.
That's the route to go.
Yeah.
And now I kind of want to, like, circle it back and just look at you as a person and what you built and kind of the doors it's opened for you. Obviously, being the biggest catering and I'd say potentially one of the biggest food groups in Canada for sure, you've always been able to meet a lot of cool people. I'm sure that's put you in a lot of rooms that maybe you didn't think you'd be in. I know you've done some, I guess you could say, celebrity chef work.
Yes, sir.
Talk to us celebrity chefing.
Yeah, talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think along the way, I've like, that NHL bubble thing was like...
Oh, probably crazy.
Was pretty crazy. Something about me, the people that know me well will say is that, like, I've manifested everything in my life. And I know that's such, like, a generic thing to say. And, like if you say it, it will come true. But, like, real talk, like, there's one guy from Toronto. We all know him, the Six God, right?
Yeah.
Drizzy Drake. When he was coming up, and obviously he's an international superstar now, but, like, I was, like, such a fan of Drake. And anyone that knows me well, like, wouldn't miss an OVO and, like, loved his music, loved, like, how he always made it about Toronto. And, like, I was just, like, shocked that, like, never had cooked for him, right? Yeah. So, like, I'm honored that I've, like, had that, like, and I put that out to the universe. I was, like, I want to cook for Drake.
Yeah.
And, you know, when that came true for me, you know, that was a pretty cool moment for me to be able to, like, to do that. And, you know, so, like, that's one person that I had always wanted to cook for and manifested that. And, you know, along the way, we've got to cook for so many celebrities and artists and musicians. And, you know, I think you realize after, like, the older you get, you know, we put these people on such a pedestal and you realize they're just human beings at the end of the day. You know, that are extremely talented, extremely focused with what their goals are willing to not care what people think to reach their goals. And I think that's, like, the main difference between, like, I don't know about you guys, but, like, for me, I don't think I could get to that level because I care so much what people think, right?
True.
It's like, I did a TO Finest where they asked me, like, the favorite restaurants. They did this whole big thing in Toronto.
Yeah, I saw that.
And I remember looking at, like, the comments and some of the things that people were saying. I'm like, you motherfuckers.
See, we're used to that shit already.
I would laugh at it. Like, and I responded to a few and then, like, deleted it.
Yeah.
But, like, celebrities, like, think about celebrities and how much shit that people talk about them on Twitter, or on Instagram, like, the memes, everything. It takes so much courage and, like, strength to put yourself out there.
Yeah.
Even just as an artist, to put yourself out there in any way.
Yeah.
But then to not give a fuck. And I'm sure as a human, they must care and certain things must get to them.
Of course.
But to power through, to really not allow that to, like, bug you, I think is really important.
Well, I said it too. I said the most loved people are usually the most hated too.
Right.
Right? Because that's when just everyone knows you. So the ratio of love to hate is going to be there.
100%,
no one hates you. Probably no one really knows you.
Yeah, that's true.
To the extent that you want to put yourself out there as, right?
Yeah.
So.
And we all talk shit, right? Like, like at the end of the day, like, that's one thing that I'm actually at this point. That's the thing. Once you've made it and it's like, it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
But, like, when you're, like, coming up and you're still not happy that you haven't reached your goals and you're hearing that all, it really affects you.
People will change their whole path based on, like, what one person said.
I'm in such
at that point, right? And during that phase when you're grinding,
correct,
right? Because you're even kind of confused. You're even, like, kind of worried, is this going to work?
Yeah, you're doubting yourself.
So one person can throw you off,
right? Because they're saying things and you're like, is that true?
You start
second guessing what you already know. This guy goes, oh, Adrian, you're a shit chef. He comments that. And you're like, then you start to think, you're like, fuck, am I? Yeah. Meanwhile, you're like, dude, I've been doing this 10 years. Like, yeah. I know I'm fucking amazing.
It's true. It like during like it gets to a point where once you're confident in yourself and what you've built and what you've created, no one can take that away from you.
Yeah.
And they can say whatever they want to say, but like it takes you, and it doesn't even have to be financially secure. In my case, that happens to be one of the things that I like. I feel a lot more comfortable now.
Of course.
But I think it's just like being secure in yourself.
Yeah.
And like once you've done that.
Is there a celebrity that you haven't cooked for that you want to cook for? Because you can manifest it right now on this right. episode.
Yeah, we like to do that. We like to say manifest something for
yourself.
Okay,
let me think. Let me think. Damn. I would like to cook for Denzel Washington.
Dang. Hey,
okay.
It's going to happen.
Okay. Yeah.
Or get like stuck that. In an elevator with him.
Yeah, either one.
Which you'll end up cooking for him after yeah, that, too.
Right? I'll drop Unreal. Some knowledge on him. Yeah, for sure.
We got our famous question.
Yeah, but before the famous question, I want to say one more thing.
Yeah.
We got to manifest.
Oh, you want to manifest?
I want to manifest something for us, too.
I'm trying to manifest he's going to cook for us. Never mind.
I was going to say, you guys.
get the pots and pans. Let's go. Jay, get them out.
Yeah, he's got some seasonings back there. Yeah, we got something some stuff. Up.
But I want to manifest Drake on the podcast. We've been saying that.
Oh, we've been saying it.
We've been saying that forever. Because I think the same way you probably looked up to him.
He shared one of our posts like a couple weeks ago.
He shared one of our posts.
And we got wow. fired up. Dude, yeah. we started flipping couches. We were running around.
The way
around.
We celebrated it was like we won the fucking World Cup. Yeah. Like we won the Stanley Cup, dude. It was like we celebrated a post reshare like that. And I don't care. People could look at us. You guys are fucking groupies. You're losers. At the end of the day, this is a guy who, from our city, which is what makes it like it hits home, reached those heights.
Mm-hmm.
It makes you believe things can... You know, that you can achieve whatever you want.
Right.
Know? Like, dude, I lined up HMV for Take Care. I was in grade 8.
It's my favorite album.
Yeah.
It's the best album ever. Yeah. 2, 3 in the morning, I convinced my mom to let me go line up there by myself.
Wow.
To go meet him. Okay. So then, and at that point, I remember looking and being like, and I knew back then, fucking 13 years old, whatever I was, 12, 13, like, oh my God, this guy is going to be fucking huge. Like, Toronto's never seen a guy like this before.
Well, so far gone. When I heard that, I'm like, it's over.
You already knew. Yeah.
Right? And so you're like, okay. And then, you know, to see him achieve what he has and still keep going is for us what's just like, yeah, that's why we need this guy in front of us on this pod.
So I'm off social media right now. What was the repost? What was it?
It was we actually were on another podcast.
Okay.
It's for our buddies in New York called the Growing Up Italian podcast. So we're both Italian.
Okay.
So they have a really big platform, like Italian Americans, like whatever. And so we went on there and we were doing this battle of like, who's better, like New York Italians or Toronto Italians?
Because
there's this like online beef, right? Whatever beef, like it's fake, right? And so they were asking us questions and then we were going like back and forth. Like, okay, so we have like, we have John Gotti. He's our mobster. Like, who does Toronto have?
Yeah.
And he goes, Drake. Yeah, and they're like,
fuck, okay, fine.
You know, whatever. They're like, yo, we have Sinatra. Like, we have Drake.
Yeah, they said Sinatra that we said Drake again. And we were just all laughing.
Laughing. It was like, it was hype, right? He's our mobster. Like, he's our guy, you know?
Yo, that's sick.
And he reposted it, which was like so cool to see. Yeah. And
that's like something like, he's like, you can just see on social media, like he's just like very approachable like, with what's going on.
Yep. He's dialed like, in.
The sense of humor. Like he was an actor, right? Like it's not just like people are meant to be what they're meant to be at the end of the day. So,
I agree. Well,
like, manifesting it, you're putting it out there.
Yeah, we got Denzel.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Listen, with that being said, obviously we are the MBH podcast, Money Buys Happiness.
Yes, sir.
So I want to ask you, Adrian, if you believe money buys happiness.
I do believe money buys happiness. And let me tell you why.
Yeah, please.
Because I think this is important. I've been thinking about this.
Okay.
It's at the end of the day, we live in a world where like currency matters. And, you know, what you decide to do with that money, though, it's not necessarily about the private jets and like going out and getting a yacht in Miami, like I'm looking at right now. But like it's more about at the end of the day, money buys you happiness because it allows you to do things for your family, for yourself, and to do good things in the world as well, right? At the end of the day, though, like health is the most important thing. We're nothing without our health. But then again, if you have money, you probably have access to the best doctors and the best chances to be okay. So yeah, I would say money does buy happiness for sure.
You came to the right show, bro.
Hell yeah.
Appreciate you, man.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys, man.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure.
Honestly. Guys, if you need your food catered, Food Dudes, all right? They're probably too busy for you right now, but you could try. You could try, all right?
Yeah. I want to go out with you guys. Like, when are we going to 11? We got to go there. That's dangerous. Don't say that. Let's go.
We're actually interviewing.
Oh, we're still live? Sorry.
We're actually interviewing the GM of 11 in 11 in a couple days from now. He's a good friend of ours. We got to introduce you.
I love that.
Get you plugged in there.
But absolutely, no, we got to go out. Man.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much. Appreciate you coming on.
It's a pleasure. Appreciate it.
Guys, if you made this far, and I know you did, you know what to do. Like, subscribe, leave a comment. We love you guys. And we'll see you next week. Yeah.
We out, baby.
Peace.